Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What happened to music that meant something?
The Who at the Kingdom or Kiss at the Coliseum. Where is the Misty Mountain Hop? Where is the... Is the smoke on the water? Where is the Iron Man of today?
Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kott. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, Jim and I are going to catch up with some big fall releases from Pearl Jam, Mariah Carey, Kid Cudi, and more.
And later on, it'll be my turn to pop a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and now it's time for some music news.
My radio, believe me, I like it loud. I'm the man with the box that can rock the crowd. Walking down the street to the hardcore beat while my JVC vibrates the concrete. I'm sorry.
Greg, that is a little bit of LL Cool J, who is eligible for the first time for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The list of potential nominees this year just came out. A couple of first-timers on there. Kiss, LL Cool J, as I said, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Genesis, the Hollies, Jimmy Cliff. They join returning candidates. These are people who've been nominated before but not voted in. ABBA, the Chantels, Darlene Love, Laura Nero, the Stooges, who've been up for a couple of years now,
yeah.
Really,
come
for goodness
on,
sake, and Donna Summer. Healthy dose of skepticism whenever you and I talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, in part because it has been very conservative, ignoring fringe musical movements like progressive rock, Genesis finally up, like punk, Stooge has been up for a couple of years, like disco, Donna Summer, same thing, ABBA to some degree, right, in favor of baby boom heroes, several of whom have been in several times. You know, I mean, the Hollies,
right.
Really, come on. You know, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young are in. You know, does Graham Nash's original group really have to get in as well? It's just silly. Plus, there is the way that the Hall of Fame operates. There's a little story I just saw the other day. Get this. This is classic. Motley Crue's Tommy Lee, also well-known sex tape performer, is going to be the judge for a contest being held at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum in Cleveland, which is sponsored by Fortune Magazine. Battle of the Corporate Bands is what it's being called. It's corporate boardroom bands from across America, guys who work for different companies, Johnson & Johnson, Chevron, right, from across the country, who get together after work and take off the tie and play in bands.
Yeah.
You know, and good for them.
Weekend everybody, warriors, right?
Everybody should have a hobby.
Yeah.
But really, is that worthy of being lauded in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? You and I were both there in Cleveland last week for an event. We got to revisit it. We'd covered the opening years ago, and I'd been there in between.
Yeah.
Touring the Hall of Fame and Museum again, Greg, just reminded me, you know, to have Jim Morrison's Boy Scout uniform in a glass case, does that tell us anything about the heart and soul of this music? Is rock and roll, philosophically speaking, something that should be enshrined
under
in a
glass
museum?
Yeah.
What about Groucho Marx's life? You know, if they wanted to put me in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's not a club I'd want to be in.
Yeah. It's a little bit antiseptic, a little bit clinical, stuff under glass, you know, these wax figurines representing former rock stars dead and somewhat alive.
And no rhyme or reason either. You have Johnny Ramone's guitar from 77, the Moe's Right, which is really worthy of being there. And then a guitar from somebody in White Zombie who I've never even heard the name. It's not Rob Zombie, but some second-tier player in White Zombie right next to it. What is that doing there?
Well, White Zombie is not on the list for this year, Jim, but we are going to find out in January which five of these 12 nominees are actually going to get inducted into the Hall of Fame and be under glass with everybody else. It's That's Lily Allen singing an appropriate sentiment about being right in the middle of a major firestorm that's developing in Europe over internet law and piracy. Artists on one side, governments on the other, the citizens and file sharers caught in between. The French National Assembly has just passed the three strikes and you're out law. We've been following this for about a year, Jim. It's gone back and forth in France about how they're going to approach this law. Now the National Assembly has given it final approval. President Sarkozy has to weigh in on it, but he's already indicated that he supports this bill. So it looks very likely that a French citizen who has been caught downloading music and sharing it on their hard drive in the privacy of their own home, we might add, if they are found doing this three times, is going to be taken off the internet and is going to be subject to fines ranging from $2,000 to $4,000 from the government and an additional $450,000 from the aggrieved copyright holder.
Well, this is the country that gave us the guillotine.
And that's exactly what they're going to be doing to file sharers. The British government is also considering a similar law, and that has opened up a whole can of worms. The artists in the UK are debating whether or not this would be a good thing. You recall that on Sound Opinions, we talked about the formation of what they are calling the Featured Artists Coalition, which is basically artists trying to create their own version of a union to discuss some of these internet and piracy issues. And they have come down firmly on the side of the consumers on this one. We're talking about artists like Annie Lennox, Radiohead, Robbie Williams, Tom Jones, of all people. They issued a statement that basically said this is a bad idea. The industry is in danger of cutting off a promotional tool that is of great use to fledgling artists who seek to create a buzz around themselves yet don't have the financial support of a major label, the organization said. They went on to further say this is a wide-scale invasion of personal privacy. Now, it's interesting, Jim, that one of the naysayers in the Artist Coalition is one Lily Allen. She has been very outspoken on a number of issues, as we found out when she's been a guest on this show. In this particular issue, she said on her blog, "We need to make clear unlawful file sharing is wrong and make an attempt to stop it." The ironies in that statement, Jim, abound.
Well, this is a woman who introduced herself to the world by giving her music away for free and encouraging people to pass it along on the MySpace page, right?
It's interesting that she would now take the opposite tack, and there are a few artists who agree with her, people like James Blunt, Mark Ronson, Alicia Dixon, Gary Kemp. Not even the artists can agree on exactly where this should go, but the big news here is that the government is becoming seriously involved in this issue in Europe. Is it only a matter of time before it happens in the United States as well?
We are, yeah, I said it, we are. This is Rock Nation. Pledge your allegiance. Get your fatigues on. All black, everything. Black cars, all black, everything. And our girls are black birds, riding with their diligence. I can't more in depth if you boys really written enough. This
is like that is a song called Run This Town by Jay-Z, which is topping the Billboard Hot 100 right now. Greg, we are about to dive in to the first full flurry of big fall album releases. Traditionally, the fourth quarter of the year is the what's left of the record industry's biggest time to put out its blockbusters, get everybody all excited, gear up, and go through the Christmas selling season. We thought before we did some of these reviews, which are going to range far and wide from Pearl Jam to Mariah Carey, that we would take a look at what's going on in the charts to the extent that they still measure what the masses of popular music are listening to. What are the Billboard charts telling us this week?
Well, it's interesting, Jim. There has definitely been a perking up of sales of compact discs in recent weeks. One of the big reasons that retailers are pointing to, of course, those the global reissue of the entire Beatles catalog on compact disc, a refurbishing of that catalog for the first time in more than 20 years. And the Beatles did incredible business over the first 5 days of that re-release throughout the world, selling more than 2.2 million copies of music that was originally made 40 years ago.
Which says, I mean, you know, that's still a fraction of what they might have sold if this had been 1992, right?
It's interesting because I think you're right about that. And in addition, I'm wondering as to how many people bought those CDs and then immediately put them on their iPods, thus robbing themselves of the complete sonic experience that everybody's talking about with these CDs.
Or what would the sales numbers have looked like if the Beatles had allowed that music to be sold through iTunes?
Well, there's the bigger question, if they had made it available digitally. Meanwhile, there's been a bit of a resurgence in the top 20 in terms of just sales, led by Jay-Z. He still seems to have an incredible amount of commercial power. In just 2 weeks, he has sold more than 770,000 records, which, again, compared to 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, probably doesn't mean much. But in this day and age, that's a pretty significant number of CDs that he has shifted in just a couple of weeks. Whitney Houston, who we talked about, we reviewed her comeback album, I Look to You, a few weeks ago. She's doing really well. She got a huge boost from that tell-all interview she did with Oprah Winfrey. Her record sold 156,000 copies in its third week, which is pretty significant. Usually, after the first or second week of big sales, we see a major drop-off for these artists. In her case, she's up over 540,000 sales.
Well, hip-hop's still driving the charts, though, right? Five of the top 10 are hip-hop records.
And it's interesting to see that there are new faces, new voices in hip-hop that are in the top 10. Kid Cudi, who we're going to review later in the show, debuting at number 4 with over 100,000 copies sold of his debut, one of Kanye West's proteges. Another interesting new voice, Drake, out with a 7-song EP called So Far Gone, sold 73,000 copies of that at number 6. And then, of course, Lil Boozy topping off the top 10 with a set that sold 49,000 copies.
That had previously been my nickname for you, Lil Boozy.
Lil Boozy, yeah, exactly. But yes, hip-hop driving the charts. And the Beatles, of course, still dominant 40 years after their heyday. We're going to talk about a bunch of new fall releases in the next couple of segments, including this one from a band out of Seattle.
That is a song, Mr. Cott, called The Fixer by Pearl Jam from its 9th studio album, Backspacer, here on Sound Opinions, leading off our big fall record review show. Who were Pearl Jam? Well, they've been kicking around a long time now. Always the most classic rock influenced of any of the bands that emerged in the so-called grunge or alternative rock era, certainly out of Seattle in the early 90s. Now they've sort of become a classic rock band themselves in a lot of ways. For this new album, they went back to a tried and true producer, Brendan O'Brien. I think the guy most associated with them throughout their career behind the production desk, hasn't worked with them since Yield. In 1998, though. He's back in the fold. And as you heard in that song, Pearl Jam's in a good mood. Eddie Vedder and the bandmates in the group have been saying, you know, we're optimistic. Times have changed. We have a new president. And this album was made in that light. So what are Pearl Jam doing on this disc? We're going to play a song for you and then come back and give our opinions on the buy it, burn it, trash it scale. This is a song called Supersonic by Pearl Jam on Sound Opinions.
Yeah,
Supersonic from Pearl Jam, their ninth album, Backspacer. Hard to believe they've been around two decades now. This is a veteran band. This is a heritage band. This is practically a classic rock band. Certainly the classic rock band for Generation X in a lot of ways.
One nurtured by the major label system. 1991, you know, their debut, 10, came out and was a super smash, brought to you by Columbia Records. There's a difference, though, with this release.
Well, it's being marketed through Target. They've gotten in bed with another corporation, although what's the difference between Sony / Epic and Target? I'm not really quite sure. I recognize a huge difference there.
Well, Sony records are also for sale at Walmart, but when you get in bed with Target, it's only for sale at Target.
Right.
However, they did make a notable exception here in insisting that independent mom-and-pop retailers from coast to coast also be able to sell this disc.
And their heart's always been in the right place for the most part. They make some moves that you kind of scratch your head at. But I think this band, if they've done nothing else, is proven that they're in it mostly for the right reasons. They are not a corporate rock band in the traditional sense. They are a band that tries to do the right thing most of the time. On this record, they're going back to a little-known portion of their sound. Most people associate them with those slow-build anthems with Eddie Vedder's voice at the centerpiece. Now they're sort of channeling that punk groove that they got on songs like Spin the Black Circle or Lucan or Do the Evolution. That's always been a part of their sound. It's more prominent than ever on this record. 11 songs, 37 minutes. You know, it's surprising that there aren't more of those big anthems on there. The only two that really aspire to that are Amongst the Waves and Unthought Unknown. The punk songs I take more as celebrations of the moment. You know, they're enjoying living in the moment, those guitars revving it up. The drummer, Matt Cameron, is exceptional on this record. And then there's three ballads that I think set those faster songs, those live-for-the-moment songs in relief, where Vedder is talking about mortality.
Yes, I understand that every life must end, As we sit alone, I know someday we must go.
They're definitely coming off that experience he had writing that solo record, that Into the Wild soundtrack album. They give it some context. You know, if we're looking for Pearl Jam to reinvent itself at this point in the career, I think we can give up on that. What this band does is put out solid albums that sort of carry the torch for classic rock. What they really want to be is a 70s rock band. And here they are in 2009 doing that job pretty well.
Yeah, but what they want to be is a 70s rock band, Greg. They have made records with and hugely admire Neil Young.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Young being a guy who has invented himself almost from album to album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, has tried on so many genres and styles, some of them successes, some of them dire failures. You know, after 9 copies of the same record from Pearl Jam, pretty much none of them being as good as that opening salvo of 10, or the first 3 albums, really, if we want to be generous. Wow, you know, they need to give us an Achtung Baby. They need to show us what else they are capable of. I love those 3 Vedder quiet Into the Wild songs because they're different. Everybody's making a big deal about the fast rock songs here. They've been on every Pearl Jam record. It's just that we have 5 of them this time instead of 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to hear something different from this band, and they're not giving it to me.
I feel like they've been re-energized. I feel the last 3 albums actually have been pretty good. And while certainly not masterpieces, I think this is a buy-it record for Pearl Jam.
Now, at best, it's a burn-it record. I endorse the quiet songs. The others I feel like I've heard before. So one buy-it, one burn-it. When we come back on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, Greg Kot and I are going to review the new albums from Mariah Carey, Basement Jaxx, Monsters of Folk, and Kid Cudi. Then it'll be my turn to pop a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. What you're hearing is a little bit of the new Basement Jacks album, Scars, a track called Saga. You may recognize the voice, that is Senti Gold, and it gives you a little idea about where Basement Jacks is going. This UK production duo, Simon Radcliffe and Felix Buxton, started out in the 90s as avatars of the new house music movement in the UK. A couple of DJs playing a lot of shows that drew huge crowds to discos around the world. Recall, in the midst of that electronic music revival in the late 90s, these guys were right at the center of it. They represented the new wave of dance music. But as their albums have evolved, they've gone into more of a songwriting pop music direction, in part because not only are they combining the dance beats that they started out with, but they're bringing in guest vocalists such as Santi Gold on the latest record. The turning point for me was the 2002 record Kish Kash, one of the best records of that year, laden with guest vocalists, laden with memorable pop songs that combine the dance beats with the melody. Scars continues in that vein, their fifth album. We're going to play a track from it first before we review it. And it's an interesting one. It's called Day of the Sunflowers. The guest vocalist on it is one Yoko Ono on Sound Opinions. Day of the Sunflowers, in parentheses, Mr. Cott, We March On, by the Basement Jacks from their fifth album, Scars, featuring the inimitable Yoko Ono on vocals. One of two guest vocalists on this album who have been guests on Sound Opinions. We've had Yoko on, we've had Lisa Calcula of the Bell Rays on. A lot of really interesting voice, Santi Gold, as you mentioned, Paloma Faith, Yo Majesty, and yet, despite the presence of some 14 guest vocalists, the album is pure Basement Jacks from start to finish. All these different voices, but a consistent sound that takes those wonderful Chicago house grooves of the 80s in a new direction, a futuristic direction, a relentlessly melodic and hard grooving direction. I love this album to pieces, and I can't get enough of it. I disagree. I loved Kish Kash. I thought that was a one of the best albums of the last 10 years, certainly one of the key dance music album releases of the last 10 years.
And you don't have room in your heart for both?
Well, I think this is a lesser version of that. And I think what's happening here, Radcliffe and Buxton have fathomed that they are, in fact, as much songwriters as producers. And while I give them the ambition of attempting to move further into that area, I think when the beats are dialed down, when they start going more for atmosphere and melody and traditional pop songs, that's where they lose me. I don't think they're quite as convincing in that mode as they are when, you know, the party groove is at an all-time high. Nobody parties like the Basement Jacks, but when it comes to those ballady type songs. And about half of this record, Jim, falls into that category for me. I think they really lose a lot of momentum. So in comparison to some of their earlier work, which I thought was outstanding, this is only a burn it record for me.
You know, I like it, as I said, start to finish. There are some quieter, chill-out moments. I don't know, maybe you don't like make-out music anymore, Mr. Codd. It's a buy-it record, as far as I'm concerned.
All up in the blog, saying we met at the bar. When I don't even know who you are. Saying we up in your house, saying I'm up in your car. But you in L.A., and I'm out at your mains. I'm up in the A, you so, so lame. And no one here even mentions your name. It must be the weed, it must be the E. Cause you be poppin', heard you get it poppin'. Oh, 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 oh. Why you so obsessed with me? Boy, I wanna know. Lying that you're sexin' me when everybody knows. It's clear that you're upset with me.
Oh, Greg, that five-octave voice can only belong to one person. Yes, it's Mariah Carey with a song called Obsessed, the first single from her new album, Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel. Many people are speculating that she is singing about Eminem, who has been taking shots consistently and sort of inexplicably. I mean, why, you know, pick on Mariah Carey, kind of like past the curve of
weird
pop culture. But she's firing back with this odd song about a stalker. The key line to me is, you are a mom and pop, I'm a corporation. Well, many people would say Mariah Carey is indeed. She is the best-selling female performer of the 90s. She has racked up, is in contention with the Beatles for racking up as many number one hits. Extraordinary stuff. Also extraordinary is the way this album is being presented. Selling advertising. They have decided that Mariah Carey sells several million albums, so why not incorporate advertising for high-end products, perfumes, cars, fashion, in the mini magazine that is being distributed with this record. We did this as a news story when it broke. It was almost too strange to be true, but now here it comes, complete with this massive push down everyone's throats. As I said, best-selling female performer of the 90s with that five-octave voice, that mix of street and boudoir, of ballads and the occasional club groover. But Mariah had a pretty dicey start to the new millennium, you know? She flopped in that movie Glitter. She had some very much publicized public meltdowns. She seemed to be going off the deep end. Now she's back. She's happy again. She's married to Nick Cannon. She's on her third multi-million deal with a third major label record company. And as I said, is getting this big corporate push. What is the music that dear Mariah has given the lambs, as her faithful are known? We'll play a song and we're going to come back and give our opinions. This is a track called It's a Wrap by Mariah Carey from Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel on Sound Opinions.
No donuts, ain't no coffee. See, I know you've seen me calling and calling. I should crack you right in your forehead. Let me take a breath, and regain my composure. Told you one more time, told you if one more time. If you effed up, it's on. When it's gone, it's gone, it's gone, it's gone. You did wrong, so wrong, so wrong, so wrong.
Don't just
It's a Wrap from Mariah Carey's 12th studio record, Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel. She's trying to add to that total of 175 million records sold, Jim, and far be it from me to rain on her parade.
She ain't kidding with, she says, you're a mom and pop to Eminem and I'm a corporation.
Well, yeah, she definitely is, and I think she can also be held accountable for a couple of generations worth of over-singing. The entire American Idol franchise of operatic belting can be traced to Mariah Carey's career. needless to say, she hasn't been my favorite vocalist. Oversings, over-emotes. But I gotta say, I like this record.
What?
I like this record. Mainly because she doesn't oversing. Maybe it's because the range wasn't there. We commented on that on the last record we reviewed, where she had clearly lost some range. But what was wrong with E equals MC squared and a couple of the records before that is she was trying to create music in kind of this hip, urban image.
She was trying to be street.
Trying to keep up with the Christina Aguileras and the Britney Spearses of the world, and not doing a very good job of it. It didn't really fit. On this record, there's a couple of red herrings along that line. We played Obsessed, the first single, and there's another track called Up Out My Face that also attempts to, you know, the girl from the hood image that she really doesn't own that well. What she does well are ballads. And here she's made a album that is based around slow jam R&B, adult-themed ballads. What I like about it production-wise is that she's not tossing out all these jobs to different producers so much, but pretty much sticking with one team, The Dream and Tricky Stewart, primarily on this record. And I think they give it a unity and a sort of a unified sound that makes it feel like an album. Above all, though, I think is her voice. The very sparse backdrops, her voice at the center of it, the multi-tracking of that voice. When you listen to a record like What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, the way he multi-tracked that voice and it seemed like he was duetting with himself on several tracks, she's doing much the same here. I think it works really well. I think on that track, It's a Wrap, that's one of the best performances of her life.
I think you've
lost it. In terms
of
just dialing down that over-the-topness that has worn her down. It's about subtlety and nuance for maybe the first time in Mariah Carey's career. I got to say, this is the best Mariah Carey record I've heard. This is a buy it for me.
Wow. I'm just so shocked. You know, you dissed Whitney Houston a couple of weeks ago on this show. To me, there is more soul in Whitney's tiny fingernail on her small finger than there is on Mariah. Look, Mariah Carey has no soul, Greg. She is a corporation. She is a talented vessel for a whole lot of nothing. The fact that she insists on writing her own songs. Yeah, there's some horrible hackneyed material on that Whitney Houston record.
Yeah.
But Mariah has nothing to say. Candy bling. That's what this album is. You know, that's the song title. That's what she gives us. It is empty. It is hollow. It is lowest common denominator. Much is being made of her going back to her quote-unquote R&B roots. I mean, what are those R&B roots? Jodeci. How dare you invoke Marvin Gaye in the same sentence as Mariah Carey? She has nothing in common with everything that I value from R&B. If that's the kind of R&B you're excited about, I know you're eagerly awaiting the return of Boys to Men. Fine.
Yeah.
I mean, what universe are you living in, lady? Go play with your poodles and get out of my face.
Yeah.
This is a trash it record.
You're reviewing her history, not this record.
This is a surprisingly
good record.
That's going to come back to haunt you in a way that I will never apologize for liking the Black Eyed Peas.
Pain was a hunting me down, but I gave him the slip. I left the city through a tunnel and I headed for the sticks. With the Reginald oil and a morphine drip. Pain was a hunting me down, but I gave him the slip. And I fell in love with identical twins. They lived 34 summers between the two of them. I gave one my ego, gave one my ear. Yeah, I gotta get back to my dirty little twins. Don't ever buy nothing from a man named Truth. Don't ever buy nothing from a man named Truth.
Man Named Truth from the new Monsters of Folk record, self-titled Monsters of Folk. Who are these guys? A very tongue-in-cheek moniker for a indie rock supergroup of sorts. My Morning Jacket's Jim James, Bright Eyes' Connor Oberst and Mike Mogus, and singer-songwriter M. Ward. These four first got together in 2004 for a tour, which was just like an old-fashioned guitar swap, you know, swapping some songs, collaborating on a few, and now it's turned into this record. Here we are 5 years later. They finally got into a studio together, collaborated on a record, basically wrote all the songs together, played all the instruments together. There are no ringers, no outsiders. A modern-day version of the Traveling Wilburys, if you will. It's certainly an indie rock answer to that in some ways. And here's a song from the record that I think sort of represents the spirit of it very well. In fact, it does remind me quite a bit of what the Traveling Wilburys sounded like back in the 80s when Bob Dylan, Jeff Lynne, George Harrison, Tom Petty, and Roy Orbison took a little bit of a busman's holiday and made a record together. The track is called Whole Lot of Losin' from Monsters of Folk on Sound Opinions.
Well, I got a lot, Lord, I got a lot of loose friends and heroes packing up and moving. One of these days I'll be left with nothing but memories and no time. So I better get, yeah, I better get accustomed, 'cause I got a lot, Lord, I got a lot of loose. By and by and by and by and by. Well, we never got paid, but we had a lot of laughs. So running like thieves through the streets of Chicago. Look at me now, I'm leaning out a broken window singing, I still miss someone. So I better get, yeah, I better get accustomed, 'cause I got a lot, Lord, I got a lot of loose.
That is Whole Lot of Losin' by the Monsters of Folk on Sound Opinions. That's an M. Ward tune. I think you can kind of tell, Greg, which are the Ward songs, those would be my favorite, which are the Conor Oberst tunes, they're okay, and which are the, you said his name wrong. I mean, suddenly he has become Yim Yames. What is that about? Why is Jim James of My Morning Jacket now Yim Yames?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. I think whenever he does a solo turn outside of the band, that's, again, My Morning Jacket humor,
I guess. People have a right to call themselves what they want, but I just think it's stupid. I don't think Traveling Wilburys is the comparison. Those were a bunch of guys that never really fit together. You know, all that superstar power, but what were they doing in the same room? It never really made a lot of sense. I think that what the Monsters of Folk, so named by one of their roadies, are trying to do is more of a Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young kind of thing. It works for me when they're doing group harmony vocals and really playing together. It doesn't work for me when the songwriting is just not up to snuff. I mean, really, Man Called Truth, that's just, I don't know, it's like fingernails on a blackboard to me. Some good moments, some unremarkable moments, and then some just awful ones. So I guess that averages out to a burn it for me on the buy it, burn it, trash it scale.
Well, the comparison I was trying to make with the Wilburys, Jim, is the affability of this record. It just sounds like a kind of a fun record to be involved in. There's not a sense of like we're taking ourselves too seriously, which can be a problem with people like Conor Oberst.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think in some ways Oberst has been tempered a little bit being around these other guys who clearly have a sense of humor about this whole thing. It feels kind of organic. It feels like they're having fun. It's not meant to be a world-changing type of record. It's just four guys who like to play music, getting together, and making a record. I think it's a fun project. I think about half of it really works. Some of the, as you said, I think the biggest issue here is the consistency of the songwriting. There's about 15 tunes on here. I would have chopped off about four or five of those, and I think you would have had a fine record. So as a result, I gotta give it a burn it.
A double burn it.
To chime in on anything we've talked about in today's show, any of these records, or anything else on Sound Opinions, give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800. You can also email interact@soundopinions.org or talk to us on Facebook. We're going to be back in a minute on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media with a final review of the debut album from rapper Kid Cudi and Jim's Desert Island Jukebox pick. Oh.
at night.
Day and night, I toss and turn, I keep stressing my mind. I look for peace, but see, I don't attain what I need for keeps. This silly game we play. Now look at this. Madness, the magnet keeps attracting me. I try to run, but see, I'm not that fast. I think I'm first, but surely finish last. 'Cause day and night, the lonely stoner seems to free his mind at night. He's all alone through the day and night. The lonely loner seems to free his mind at night.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. That is a track called Day and Night from rapper Kid Cudi. Big internet smash in 2008. That song leaked on the internet. Got picked up all over the place on blogs and e-zines and was massively hyped. Here was a strong new voice in the hip-hop realm. Kid Cudi, otherwise known as Scott Mascotti, Cleveland native, mentored by Kanye West, has appeared on West's 2008 record, 808s and Heartbreak, and also made a well-received cameo on Jay-Z's latest record. So this guy's gotten some high-profile jobs in recent months. In addition, he's been out there working on a debut album, which is finally out. It's called Man on the Moon, The End of Day. It is a five-act opera of sorts, and we'll get into the details of that in a second. But we want to play a track first. It's called Solo Dolo from Kid Cudi on Sound Opinions.
Listen good, I don't have nobody but what I might feel. All the sounds of sanity, hoping what I hear loops itself continuously. Then I won't be afraid. No, no.
Oh, 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 oh. Why must it feel so wrong when I try and do right? Do right. Oh, 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 oh. Soaring through paradise when I'm closing my eyes. I'm Mr. Solo Dolo. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh.
Look at me, you tell me just what you see. Am I someone whom you may love or enemy? Am I speaking for you and yours or someone else? I need some answers. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, oh, oh. Why must it feel so wrong when I try and do right? Do right. Paradise when I'm closing my eyes. I'm Mr. Solo Dolo.
Solo Dolo, in parentheses, Nightmare, by Kid Cudi from Man on the Moon / The End of the Day on Sound Opinions. A really fascinating and very ambitious record, Greg. As you said, a five-act play. Mr. Solo Dolo is kind of the central character that moves through it, like Pink of Pink Floyd's The Wall. Not always successful, this thing. I think that Kid Cudi is not nearly as great a lyricist as he is a musical visionary. Mm. There's some real ambition on this record. We see a genre shaping up in hip-hop between 808s and Heartbreak and this record of a kind of dark night of the soul, what in rock and roll would have been Big Star Third or Tonight's the Night by Neil Young or the third Velvet Underground album, right, where it's kind of a dark, introspective, haunted, narcotic album in a lot of ways. There are some wonderful moments, especially when the music is clicking with Kid Cudi's kind of laconic delivery, a little bit like Snoop Dogg at times, it reminds me.
Mm-hmm.
Management provides some cool beats. So does Rat-A-Tat. So two indie rockers he's drawing from. We got Kanye West making a bunch of cameos. We got Common, who, it breaks my heart to say, you know, I so have loved Common through 85% of his career, but boy, has he been on the downswing lately. He comes in as this kind of officious narrator and just like, what a drag. It's like, go home, Pop, you know? But overall, you know, musically it's wonderful. I don't think he's that strong lyrically.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the Common narration, I'm not sure to lay the blame at the feet of Common or the overseer of this album, which, you know, has to be Cudi. Saying, you know, what were you thinking? You really don't need that. You're starting to get into Moody Blues territory here.
That's it. That's exactly what I've been trying to do. Cold gray orb that rules the night.
Yeah, this portentous type of monologue going on throughout the record. Lyrically, I think it illustrates the shortfalls of this record. Cudi's basically talking about, you know, being a stoned loner and traveling to his own personal dark side of the moon. He actually references the Pink Floyd album,
which is
earlier.
Fine, except when he starts to get sexist, because he can be a bit of a pig.
He can be, and again, that part of his game needs to be picked up. But musically, this is one of the most innovative hip-hop records of the last 3-4 years. Those interior monologues built on that kind of Ghost in the Machine beat style that he has. You know, it's not this emphatic kind of thing going on. You've got these gothic keyboards, these melancholy strings, hooks all over the place. I mean, each one of these songs is kind of like an insidious little element in it. It just sticks in your head for days afterward. It's a cliche, but it's a headphone record. He's a maverick, one of the most unique new voices in hip-hop. It's a buy-it record for me.
You know, I was on the fence, Greg, between buy it and burn it, but you're right. The music is so powerful, I'm going to forgive some of the more boneheaded lyrical moments and say buy it as well.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
You remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible, we like to take a trip to the Desert Island Jukebox and pop a quarter in to play a song we cannot live without, and this week it is Jim DeRogatis' turn.
Thank you, Mr. Cott. I have no great story or reasoning for why I want to play this single I'm going to play, except that I want to hear it now. And we haven't had much rock and roll in this show, so I think we need an injection of high-energy, ultra-melodic rock and roll. The Lime Spiders were part of that great Australian garage rock explosion of the late 70s and early 80s. I'm thinking of bands like the Celibate Rifles and the Most, who were fellow travelers of the Lime Spiders. And you know, actually, it all was started by the Saints, mm-hmm. who just ushered us in with the Desert Island intro. Lime Spiders are still a going concern. Formed in 1979 by Mick Blood, who's kind of the central guy there on lead vocals. They still play reunion shows. If they've been to the States, I haven't heard about it in the last 20 years, mm-hmm. but I guess they still play shows. This was their second single. Came out in 1985. Was called Out of Control on the A side, Save My Soul on the B. But boy, Out of Control just is one of the best garage revival songs I've ever heard. I got nothing else to say about it except you're going to love this. Here it is on Sound Opinions.
Your pain.
The Lime Spiders coming at you on actual vinyl 45, huh? I bought this in Germany. Look, it says Deutschmark 10.
That cover is just jumping off of that little vinyl single. It's awesome.
Dayglow Orange and Green. Lime Spiders, Out of Control, my Desert Island Jukebox pick. What do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to take a look at the intersection of rock music and video games and how they are transforming the music industry.
Fascinating stuff. As always, Sound Opinions was produced by our ace team of Todd Bachman, Jason Saldana, and Robin Lynn, with executive production and fearless oversight from Tori Southside Malatia, who, it should be noted here at the tail end, 200 shows we have now taped on Chicago Public Radio, and he has yet to kick us off Navy Pier. That's got to be worth something. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. Now it's time to hear what you have to say.
New messages.
Hi guys, this is Scott Neff calling from Minneapolis. I'm finally getting around to leaving you a message on the Big Star's dissection of Number One Record and Radio City a couple of weeks back. What I find amazing is how often I can listen to Number One Record and Radio City, and it still feels fresh and enjoyable to my ears. It was really great to hear Big Star's drummer Joni Stevens' perspective of that time period, with the music industry filled with so many overinflated egos and your disillusionment. I can't tell you how wonderful it was to hear such a positive, humanistic account from a quote-unquote rock star. It left me feeling better about the world we live in, and I thank you guys for that. Take care.
Hi, Jim and Greg. This is Margaret from just outside of Chicago. I couldn't help but call and say how much I truly enjoyed your album dissection of Big Star's Number One Record and Radio City. I was lucky enough to first get to listen to those albums back when I was like 13 or 14 in the early 90s. And I just remember like sneaking into my brother's bedroom when he wasn't home just to catch a listen to those songs, just such beautiful songs. And I remember thinking, like, how is it possible that nobody knows who these guys are and there's so much crummier stuff on the radio? But it was just so great to hear your thoughts and appreciation of the music. Thanks again. You guys are great.
Hi, Jim and Greg. This is Colin, and I really enjoyed your breakdown of the U2 career. Greg, I totally agree with you on Pop. It's a really underrated and misunderstood album. As Bono says, it's an album that starts with a party and ends with a hangover. I wish you guys had seen Sunday Night's show before writing your reviews. The band's sense of humor was more on display than the previous night and had a little more spontaneity. I think there's more performance art than artifice on this show. You know, that's the U2 that I love. And I think it's great. And so thank you guys for doing a good show, and I'll keep listening.
With around you chopping and changing, surgery in the air, print shirts and southern accents, cigars and big hair.
Greg, you're not the only person in the world who thinks that Pop is the best face of you two. I actually cheered out loud in my car when I heard that on the broadcast. I got into that record in 1999 and have been listening to it pretty religiously since. Actually, I lost my copy a few years ago and was so excited when I found another copy used that I sprung for it right away. Really, what's so great about that record is that it's almost music in a gonzo form. I mean, they inhabit and explore all kinds of absolutely twisted personas that are brought on by just fame and decadence. The song that really defines the record for me is probably Miami. I think it's a reverse drum line that leads in with it, then to just this super simple guitar solo from the Edge right after the line, "Here comes car chase."
Here comes car chase.
It's pretty daring, it's pretty righteous, and I think that's the band they could have been. Radiohead, OK Computer, that analogy was great. Radiohead became the band they could have been. U2 didn't. So this is Corby out of Pittsburgh. Thank you so much for saying that. I feel validated. Great show.
No more messages.
To give us your opinion on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 1-888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.